Hello, it's Ed, and welcome to another episode of Transmission. Today, we're joined by Michael Bogdan, who is a partner at Lockton. And this conversation is going to be all about batteries and insurance. We're going to start off the conversation looking at Moss Landing, a recent fire at a US battery site. We're going to move on to how insurance works alongside battery projects as they go through development, construction, and operation. And then finally, we're going to look at how insurance thinks about new products as they come to market. Let's jump in. Hello, and welcome to Transmission. Today, we are joined by Michael. Michael, welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here today.
And we're going to go to the world of insurance. But before we get started on that, I wanted to start off with you, your experience, the company you work for, and kind of why you have or your history within the space.
Sure. Well, my name is Michael Bogdan. I work with Lockton, which is a global insurance advisory firm and brokerage. We work with clients across the economy. I've been working with Lockton for the last 10 years and been in the space for 17 doing insurance for renewable energy and conventional power stations.
Okay, superb. And maybe just on the battery side of that. So when was kind of the first time a battery project came across your desk?
Well, batteries started for me in 2014. We saw our first project. It was just a 4 megawatt, 2.6 megawatt hour battery in Ohio. And it was built by one of our established wind and solar developer clients. And so we moved into that space. And I really became fascinated with the technology and saw its potential and looked to be involved in it ever since.
Mm. It's actually quite funny that some of those earlier projects that were sort of 4 megs back in 2014, 2015, the naming of those was occasionally like the big battery. And then kind of as time has gone on, those names haven't kind of like withstood the test of time.
Yeah,
as things have got enormous.
No, it's true. And the duration as well. I think the duration on that was a lot shorter than what we're seeing today. And it's, but you know, it was the test case, but you got to start somewhere.
Absolutely. Okay. So I really want to just dive into one of the most topical parts of batteries at the moment. And I actually want to go to Moss Landing. So what is Moss Landing and what happened there recently?
Sure. My understanding of Moss Landing is that, you know, it is a large battery. I'm not sure the exact date, but it was built prior to 2020. It was built in an indoor specification, which is not something we see as often today. It's reported that there was a fire at the site and that fire had pretty substantial damage. The insurance press is reporting around $400 million is what the loss could be to the insurance market for those who insure it. So it's gotten everyone's attention, and it's something that the insurance industry is looking carefully at as it evaluates everything related to renewable energy and conventional energy as well.
Okay. And so the impact of something like that is that people all of a sudden see the kind of the size of loss that's possible. How did the industry react to that kind of event? How has it changed or has it changed how people think about insuring batteries today?
Sure. Well, it's still a relatively recent event. So I think, you know, the jury is still out. But a lot of the trends I see as an insurance advisor from talking to the market on a regular basis is they note, while this was a major event, and all major events that are insured, their claims will be paid. And that claim needs to be recouped by the insurers. It's kind of the law of large numbers, where a lot of people pay premium in, and occasionally a claim does occur and everyone has to contribute to that. That is the risk sharing aspect that is insurance. Now, but specifically about Moss Landing and what it means for other battery storage owners is, I think that the news is not dire, because the project, as it's reported, is quite different from the projects I see on my desk on a daily basis. We are mostly seeing LFP chemistries in the batteries that are coming out, and we are seeing outdoor installations, and those are inherently going to help avoid fire spread from one container to the other. Moss Landing was an indoor specification, and that's probably the key difference. So when you look at, if you're building a project today and you want to make sure you're managing risk and you'll be insurable, I think, you know, just following the specifications and the standards we're seeing in the industry today should make people feel comfortable that the insurance market will support projects.
Okay. And just to kind of put one clarification on that Moss Landing point, I think Moss Landing was a phased build out, and the kind of the earlier phase was indoor and some of the later phases have been outdoor.
That's a good point.
The fire was on the indoor portion, which
Correct.
Is kind of why you're talking about the indoor part of it. But really kind of what you're driving at is the change from the NMC chemistry that was originally used to the LFP chemistry that's used today, in addition to the specifications and kind of spacing that's thought about for battery projects. Is that, in your mind, is that almost treated as kind of almost like two different stages of technology?
Yeah, it's the evolution of the technology. I think when some of the earlier projects were built, there just wasn't a knowledge and an experience that came from time. Time really provides that experience for all industries. And I think, you know, we see some cases where there were indoor battery installations that were built because the local council didn't want to have a bunch of containers on visible from the road. And they said, why don't you build something over it that makes it look more like a rustic barn? You know, that might be good for aesthetics, but when you're thinking about risk management, that may not be the choice you make. And I think that's now taken by the industry and understood. We have to push back when asked to cover them unnecessarily. And because I think ventilation is a key aspect of managing risk on batteries. And so you see primarily outdoor installations. And another area was, you know, we spent a lot of time educating the owners of assets on what adequate spacing means, because the OEMs will tell you that, you know, this battery will work if you space it somewhat closer together than we would recommend or the insurance industry would recommend. So we said, yes, just because it will work at a closer spacing doesn't mean you should necessarily build it that way. And I spent a lot of time talking with OEMs and the owners who are going to buy from them about why you might want to give a little more space. And, you know, and if you, and in some geographies like the US where space is less at a premium, that's easier to do. And in the UK and other geographies where space is tighter, you have to work a little harder to make sure you have that space. But we found for our clients that if you show adequate spacing, you show chemistry that's gone through certifications and standards, the UL testing is becoming the way now, and there are others. But going hitting those milestones and hitting those standards and certifications gives a project that is bankable for insurers.
Okay. And then we just mentioned the UL testing very briefly there, mm-hmm. just to give a high level. What is UL testing?
Sure. I mean, United Laboratories is a testing body, and they come up with a series of standards for various, all forms of technology. You'll see the little UL symbol on a lot of your electronic goods around your house. I believe it's a US certification, so it may be more US centric, but it's a standard that's adopted. And anytime a battery cell is coming to market, it's recommended that they get a UL 9540A test. And that test measures all sorts of readings about off-gassing and other elements. And it's just the testing and passing the testing and how you pass the testing. It's not just passing a test. It's the results, showing your work on how it responds to temperature and heat and various variables. That read by insurance engineers who will then sign it off and say, yes, this works for us. That's a key milestone in showing that your project is insurable.
Okay. And so if I've been in the BESS space over the last 5 or 10 years, like how has it changed from an insurance perspective over those years? I think we've kind of talked a little bit about spacing, chemistry, and a little bit on kind of testing. More broadly than that, how has the space changed for battery owners?
Yeah, I mean, well, I think insurance in general, in my experience, is very optimistic. They want to support economic activity. They want to support innovation in industry to make things work more efficiently. So I think when batteries came to market, as I mentioned with my earlier case about a 4-megawatt project, it was a well-established wind and solar owner who was building and owning assets in multiple countries. And they came to us and the insurer with the proposal, and we came at it from a positive affirmation. We want to support this. We just need to understand it. And so what we do is insurers, and it's important to understand that Lochtan and myself, we are insurance advisors. We represent the owners of the assets, and then we bring the technology that they want insured to the insurance market, which is the risk capital. Lochtan and the insurers would work together and say, this is the technology and this is how it works. And the insurers would say, okay. And they would learn as it was evolving. And that was in 2014. There were very few projects. So if you think about risk, you know, it was a modest risk, and they had a whole lot of wind and solar, so they could manage it and balance it through a portfolio approach. And then in 2019, 2020, we started seeing a lot of our clients who were wind and solar developers saying, we're going big into batteries. And a lot of those were in the California market in CAISO. And we were working with a very large solar developer there who said, we need to be putting batteries in our area because, you know, the duck curve is getting worse every year and we're going to not be able to build more solar, which is what we've been doing and we want to continue. So they said, we're going with batteries. Then we had some UK clients who just were seeing opportunities to build standalone batteries to manage the onshore or the offshore wind that was coming into the market and helping with ancillary services and various elements like that. And that's when we really saw the big jump. That's when Lochtan started getting moving into the gigawatts of projects that we've done. We're now up to 5 gigawatts gigawatts plus that we've been supporting owners with. But it was right at that time when the insurance terms and conditions got a bit more restrictive, because I think there was enough of it coming on that the insurance market wanted to pump the brakes a little bit and say, okay, are we sure we're taking a lot of this on? Is this going to work the way we think it's going to? And so there was definitely an element of concern. And that's where the standardization came from. It was the insurers who were pushing to see UL certifications, and if not, other forms of certification, other forms of risk mitigation. And they really put the industry through its paces. And that's how it evolved. And the pricing, you know, pricing is always relative, but pricing was considered higher at that point. And now I think we're entering a place where we're in that third phase, where we're seeing the standardization take place, and the insurance is getting more comfortable with the technology because the technology is maturing, the people who are deploying it have experience, and that just means they should be fewer issues that will hit insurance policies, and therefore the industry wants to support it.
Okay, so near term, we've seen sort of insurance premiums get more confidence and therefore perhaps be lower cost over the last few years. I'm really interested in those first projects. So were they kind of particularly restrictive in terms of insurance premiums, or were they kind of thought to be, look, this is just a 4 megawatt unit, so like the total loss on this is not huge, so we're happy just to kind of get the ball rolling on this one, not put on a huge premium. And then, as you say, like it kind of was 2019, 2020 when all of a sudden this was big enough that you thought, okay, actually we need to really think about what these premiums look like. And not to say they weren't thought about before, but is that reading between the lines correctly?
Yeah, I think there's an element to that, especially if you're a large developer who puts a lot of insurance premium into the market in more established technologies. When you bring a newer technology, you'll probably get a little better reception than if you were just a single entity who's never had a relationship with some insurers and says, I want to try something that no one's ever done before. So there is that element to it. And the small size initially made it a little easier to just, I think the way the insurance industry would describe it is to take a portfolio approach and say, okay, we can manage this within a portfolio. But as you say, as it got bigger, you know, I think they said, you know what, let's just, before this is now becoming its own portfolio, let's make sure we're putting the rigors in place. And underwriting standards became more strict and more severe. And I don't think it necessarily impacted the pricing as much as it just impacted the demand for information that owners and developers would have to put forward to show that this project was fit for purpose.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we spent a good chunk of time just on how the premiums have changed. I'm really interested to go to the sort of insurance for dummies, because this is very much your world, and I think some groups listening will understand it well and will have developed their own projects and know exactly what a sort of a good insurance product looks like. But others will also be listening and thinking, oh, I don't know too much about insurance, and so I've just had the idea, I want to go live with a 50 megawatt 100 megawatt hour battery. When do I go and get insurance? Like, when is the right time to go and buy that?
Yeah, no.
And what do I need to buy?
Yeah, no. I mean, there's a lot of different insurances out there, and I'll try to keep it on a high level for you, because you know this is an area that we love to talk about, so we could do it all day. But I think if you look at it as from a developer aspect, you know, you putting aside, there's commercial insurances that every business needs to have. You need those too, but anyone can speak to you about that. But really, for project insurances, we approach it in three different stages. We approach it with development, you know, prior to construction, all the things you're doing, the actual construction, which is really the meat of it. That's probably the most risky time, and then the onward operations. And during development, we recommend that you take out a basic liability policy that just protects your interest related to anything going on to the site you just leased. I'm assuming you signed a lease agreement. Your lease will require you to have some insurance, and also you're going to have engineers and other surveyors on site. You want to make sure that if something happens to them on site, that you're adequately protected. There's also, if it's your vision and you're putting everything together, you're a director or an officer of the company for the SPV that's going to build this project, you're going to want some personal protections called directors and officers liability insurance to make sure that if trying your best, something doesn't work out, that it doesn't impact you personally. So that's an important insurance at the early stages. And also, if you're taking on any design exposure, design risk in writing, you know, how the project's going to work, there's something called professional indemnity insurance, which all engineers would have standard, but you know, you may want it for yourself if you're taking on the risk of designing and other elements early stage.
Okay, so that was development stage.
Yep.
So kind of three buckets of insurance at that stage. But when we move into construction, as you say, the kind of almost the most risky element, how do those three change, and do we need to add any more to this picture?
Yeah, those continue, the ones that you've done, but then you switch the development liability to a construction liability, which will be a more robust insurance because there's a lot more activity going on the site. You went from having a couple of surveyors on site to having a whole EPC and their crew, general contractors. And then you have the batteries arriving on site, and they're coming from all over China or other territories. So you need marine cargo insurance. And also for the step-up transformer is a key piece of equipment. If you have that on a project size, on utility scale, we're seeing them be part of the projects. And those are the long lead items. So you really need robust insurance to, you know, in case something happens during transit of the transformer or the containers.
I think that's quite interesting. So when do you take ownership of that? If that is a transformer and it is going onto a ship, let's say coming out of China, when does your insurance need to cover that?
That will depend on the contract you sign with the battery supplier and also the EPC or the BOP contractor for the various parts. So it's contract by contract. And it's very important that your insurance advisor kind of dovetails your contracts with the insurance they provide for you. And that's the role of Lockton, is to kind of make sure that dovetails just right.
And we've got EPC and BOP.
Yeah.
What do they mean?
So there's an engineering, procurement, and construction contractor. That's kind of a soup to nuts kind of contracting mechanism. And then there's also and that would be for, you know, doing the whole project. But sometimes you just have, you know, you'll have a battery supply contract, and then you'll have a separate BOP or BOP, which is a balance of plant, which is all the parts that are not the batteries. It's a contracting regime. That's really what developing renewable energy projects are. It's contractual management is the biggest part of it. Okay. That and logistics with procurement and things like that.
And so they might hold the insurance or the liability for some of those assets before they come onto your site, and at some point they get handed over and
yeah.
they then sit within your book and you have to hold insurance for them.
Yeah, and the wild card on the insurances, and probably the reason why advisors such as Lockton are so important for this process, is the dynamic of lenders being on the projects. Is almost all the projects we do are non-recourse financed, meaning that the bank frankly owns more of the project than the equity holder does at the start of the project. And they will have their own requirements that they want met. So they may look at the contracts and say, actually, I want this change because I want to make sure that it's as de-risked as possible. And a lot of that has to do with future revenues of the project. So all that insurance needs to often have at least 12 months of loss of revenue cover. If something went wrong, the transformer went in the ocean, the cells did not work when they arrived, that there'd be some form of loss of revenue protection. And insurance provides that, coupled with property insurance.
So let's get on to the last phase. So we come out of construction, we go into operations. How does that change the insurance picture again?
It becomes the O&Ms, the operations and maintenance contractors, domain at that point. And that's really the life of the operational life of the project. So there's not as many people on site. It's not as much of a risk, I'd say, for that element. And it just needs to be managed. The insurance at that point is really operational, all risks is what we call it. And that comes with that revenue protection. If something goes wrong, you can get a year's worth of revenue if the whole site went down for an insured event that was a property event. And so, but you also need, similar as development and construction, you need a liability because, you know, you've got a lot of electricity running through this site and people do enter the site. You need to make sure that if, you know, you're protected if something unforeseen happens to them. And then there's also the element of cyber insurance. You know, there's always a concern with, is there a possibility that there could be malware that impacts the operations of the site? And there are cyber insurances for operational assets that can, you know, help mitigate some of the risk that comes with that.
Okay. So huge number of options of insurance you could hold. Is this standardized? So does every site in GB kind of hold, or this could also be globally, does every site hold the same set of insurances, or is it kind of different from site to site?
I'd say the core insurances of property insurance and liability insurance are standard, and I'd say often, and then marine cargo insurance during the transits. It really depends on what the lender's requirements are. So a lot of the insurance that's bought is guided by lenders' due diligence. So lenders work closely with the insurance advisor to make sure that they feel adequately covered there. But yeah, so those are the key insurances. And really, I'd say it's the property insurance that is the most complex as far as getting it completed. Going back to those standardizations, specifications of the project, layouts of projects, the property insurers, that is probably the largest premium spend of all the different classes of insurance. And it's the one that requires the most onerous due diligence as far as providing information. And that's an area that I think some developers do struggle with, is the amount of information required to get insurers comfortable with the property risk associated with a battery storage project.
And what are the kind of risks that you're looking at within, say, property insurance that cause it to be so expensive?
I think it's really the risk of thermal runaway. That is the biggest fear. I don't think, if you look at loss statistics, thermal runaway won't be the most common loss that insurers fear when it comes to battery storage, but it will be the fear that keeps them up at night. Because, you know, Moss Landing is an example of that. You know, the fear of one thermal runaway event in one container that was put too close to another container, and somehow, despite best efforts, the fire was spread because of heat. Then all of a sudden there was off-gassing in the adjacent container and something went wrong, and then it caught fire. And if there's a chain event of each, you know, that is the worst case. That is the black swan event for insurers, which is why they feel they need to put in an adequate risk premium, you know, that clients pay to make sure that if it does happen, just like we saw in California at that site, you know, there is premiums that can cover the losses. And so that's what draws the pricing.
Okay, super, super interesting. And I suppose just to kind of maybe to do a more full picture around that. So it's not just the fire portion that feeds into that calculation, right? There are other types of events that could happen that would fall under that insurance.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, I mean, while the fire risk is what we talk about a lot, there's just standard risk that happens at any natural site, what we call natural catastrophe risk, which is, and we see that a lot in solar and in wind as well. If you put things outside, you know, they are exposed to the elements. You will have, I'd say, flooding is a big concern. You know, water and batteries aren't natural friends. And so we have, so that's any kind of flooding issues are something that insurers would be concerned with. Anything to do with windstorms and things that knock out equipment, those are all things that are priced in. So it covers all of those things. It's technical risk and also natural risk. And also contractor workmanship issues. You know, that's probably where we've seen the most losses is you know, just contractor error, you know, pouring concrete, connecting things in a way that may not have been right, you know, those are covered under the property insurance. So it covers a variety of things in order to keep the project on track and it can get back online.
Okay, superb. And then just to understand what kind of sizes we're talking about here. So I think that was a whistle-stop tour through the types of property insurance, when you might have them. But just to get a kind of concept of how important these insurance costs are for projects, Is this kind of a top cost you will see from an O&M perspective, or is it a sort of a significantly smaller one?
Yeah, no, I think that's the question that we get asked most often. How much is it going to cost me? The answer is it depends. The factors that go into it is how big your project are. It's immediately, there's a ratio that you can use against CapEx. So whatever your CapEx is, you multiply it by X number of basis points, and that will be your insurance premium. And that's often down to how much risk you're going to retain. Do you want to give the first loss to the insurers, or are you willing to retain, you know, the complete loss of several containers without it hitting your insurance, or do you need it lower down than that? You know, and it also has to do with your experience. Experienced developers will get better treatment, I'd say, because they're known entities. They put premium into the market. They've delivered successful projects. They have a track record. So that's really what Lockton does as an advisor, is we work really hard to help our clients differentiate themselves, to say, you know, what's high versus what's low, what's in the middle premium wise. It's how you present your risk to the market and show your expertise. And a lot of our clients really have this expertise in-house. It's just our job as the advisor for insurance to kind of channel it and share it with the insurance market. But the reason why this matters is because at the end of the day, it's going to be your second highest OPEX cost, maybe your third highest. The O&M will be the highest cost. But after that, it's one of the top costs. And, you know, there are ways to manage it. And if you can get that cost down, you can, you know, have a better return on your project.
But it's really interesting that it's much more of a two-way conversation than I would have imagined, right? That I kind of would have imagined that you would represent the client and bring that through to the insurers and the underwriters, and they would kind of say, this is your number. There's kind of no wiggle room here. But it sounds like there is very much a conversation of, actually, we can kind of tweak this parameter here in terms of the loss we're willing to take. We could bring forward this expertise about what we've done in the past. And then there sounds like there is some flexibility within that process.
Yeah, it's really an art, not a science in a lot of ways. At least I feel the role of the advisor is to really just, you know, take the science and make it presented in a way that shows that, that gives confidence. Insurance is a trust business. It's like, do I have faith in the person doing this economic activity that they're taking all the right steps to manage it appropriately, and that it's a safe place to put my company's capital? Because at the end of the day, these insurance companies do need to turn a profit. They want to do it sustainably and in a way that allows their clients to progress with their business as well. But it is a business.
Okay, and perhaps moving on from the sort of very specific storage projects, maybe going to the market more globally, how is storage evolving? Are you seeing new geographies coming in that are looking for insurance products?
Yeah, when it comes to insurance, geography is really not a barrier, particularly in the London insurance market. So I think, you know, we currently are seeing the big areas being the US, the UK, and Australia. We Lockton currently has a lot of business there, but we're also seeing our clients, and again, the similar story just a couple of years later, we're seeing our clients in South Africa that have long been doing wind and solar, our clients in Chile who've been doing wind and solar, they're starting to come to us with battery projects now. And we're also seeing continental Europe come up in a big way. Germany and Italy, I was just at the Energy Storage Summit in London a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, Germany came up and Italy came up in a lot of conversations, as well as other territories within Europe. So I think those, but even, you know, far or near the insurance market, so long as it's not a sanctioned territory, the insurance market will work in a fully global business wherever the battery industry wants to go.
And that can be, that's kind of really interesting, because it's like the US market, the UK market, the Australian market has done a lot of work to get insurers and underwriters comfortable with how this looks, how this works, data around it. It kind of feels to me like it will then be easier for new markets to come through, because insurance products that are available are more developed, there is more data, it is easier to know what you need.
Yeah. I mean, the first mover always does the heavy lifting. So I think that's true in all industries. And so I think, you know, but the US is, I think there are elements about the US and the UK that make it a little easier to be a first mover in new technologies. So it's a pretty tried and tested path that other renewable energy technologies have taken. So I think it will work out and lessons will be learned. And I think the insurance market won't dive in completely saying, oh, it worked in the UK, it's going to work in another territory. They're going to say, okay, this is the contractor's first time putting in a battery project. Are they following the QCQA protocols, the quality assurance, quality control protocols that are standard in the UK, but might be new to them? Those are the kind of questions insurers are going to ask as we move into new territories, but it's not insurmountable.
Okay, that makes sense to me. And in terms of, we talked about new geographies, but these types of insurances that you can have, are they changing? Are they, like, can someone come forward and buy like a bundled product for all of these together? Or are these kind of, are these very much sort of set in stone and they're the same insurance products and they will be in 10 years time?
Yeah, well, there are attempts to bundle. We've seen attempts to bundle marine and construction insurance together. That's a common bundling way of doing things. But it's somewhat of an artificial bundle in some ways, because at the end of the day, the different insurers have different appetites. And the insurance market, while from an outsider, it may appear to be a monolithic beast, it's really made up of tens, if not hundreds, of individual insurers who have different risk appetite for different areas. And the role of the advisor like Lockton is to be the matchmaker, find the right capacity of the insurance market for the right part of the risk. And I'm if you're getting someone who can say they can do everything in one, you know, there's going to be some inefficiencies in there somewhere, perhaps. So
okay.
To date, I've seen it. It's still a specialized market in the different classes of business. But within the classes, there are ways to streamline it and simplify it. And I think that we're finding that at Lockton, there's a lot of opportunity now because of the, you know, the way the business is run, the successes of the battery industry is now insurers are having more levels of acceptance for established technologies. And I think within that property insurance, which is the main spend, you're seeing a, you know, there are opportunities to simplify and speed up the process. And that's okay. What Lockton's working towards.
Okay. And then just to talk about, so of that set of insurances that you can get, feels like actually there might be 6 or 7 different underwriters who might be behind each element of it. Is that kind of fair to say, or is it often one firm will pick up the whole piece?
No, it's different, 6 or 7. And I would say that's for each class. We're talking about liability, talking about marine, talking about property. Those are the kind of, talking about cyber. Those will be different insurance companies in those areas. Some of them might do both, but it'll be different teams with different methodologies for the insurance. So it's quite a varied mix of players. And it's also important to understand that on your property insurance for your hypothetical 50 megawatt, 100 megawatt hour project, it may not be one insurer that's insuring it. It will be one insurer who what we say, take the lead. They will write the first 30% of it. And then they will say, I don't want to take the whole risk. And so therefore, it's what we call syndicated down to get to 100%. There may well be five or six insurers just on a 50 megawatt project.
Okay. It's really interesting that it kind of kicks in at 50 megawatts. So kind of maybe in kind of a few years ago, you think about 50 megawatts as being the biggest projects that are built today. Biggest battery that I think is live currently that's a BESS battery is like 1 gig, 3 gigawatt hours in the US. Mm-hmm. And so that will definitely be the kind of the syndicate approach where mm-hmm. many insurers will sit behind each of those products.
Yeah. And that statement may have been a bit out of date. I think maybe a couple of years ago as batteries were, you know, you would see that syndication, but now a 50 megawatt project probably could be done by one or two. And then it's just a question of whether that is the right choice to go with one insurer for everything, or if you want to have some diversification.
Yeah, really, really interesting. And throughout this conversation, you've kind of hinted that kind of London leads on a lot of the insurance world. And it is not something I spend a lot of my time talking about batteries and very little time talking about the insurance world. So why is, like, just as a little lesson on insurance for everyone listening, like, why is London important in the insurance world?
Yeah, no, happy to discuss. You know, as you can tell from my accent, I'm based in the London market. I've been a London insurance broker for 15 years, but I started my career in New York and I really wanted to do renewable energy. And I found at that time, you know, if you wanted to write the big renewable energy projects, you had to come to London. I was doing smaller projects in New York, but then to write a global book of renewable energy business, London was the place to do it. I followed that and found it to be a really innovative insurance market. I think everyone who works within it is really keen to support the industry that they're working in. They're very optimistic. Sometimes insurers may have a reputation for being a bit pessimistic when it comes to risk, but they're actually quite optimistic. They want to take it on. And London is the place where they do it first. I talked about the first mover. The first movers in any new technology, more often than not, for insurance tend to be in London. And then once London shows the way, the regional markets, which, you know, there's a US regional market, a Middle East regional market, an Asian regional market, they will start to pick up on it. And they all will write the technology out of their own markets now. But, you know, the first tends more often than not to be in London, which makes this the right place to come with new technologies. So I think when the next chemistries come out that are not quite proven yet, you know, that is where the insurance will start. It will be in London.
And why does London hold that position of being kind of at the forefront of looking at new products?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. And the way I would answer it is just the history. I mean, London's been doing organized insurance since the 1700s. It started in Lloyd's of London, and it's really kind of, it has a history. And that history continues today. And I think the London insurance market's quite proud of what it has. And they're keen to keep their position as that innovator. So they're willing to put the work in, frankly. And there's a good infrastructure in London built around it.
It's kind of like a multiplying effect of having business going through, having people who are minded to look at the new business, gets the area working well. Okay, really interesting. Okay, so I want to ask one more question before we go on to the final two questions, which is that we've talked a lot about BESS here, but actually we can kind of go beyond BESS and say, well, when a new technology comes onto your desk and it is something that's not battery related, so let's say it's a synchronous compensator, how do you ensure that?
Yeah. You know, insuring new technology is not easy. It requires a lot of work to understand it. And absent kind of certifications, it can be, there's an element of trust that comes in believing that the technology will deliver as it says. So oftentimes in those early stages, there will be insurance for that technology. But if the technology is deemed prototypical, there will be restrictions that are put on it. And that is, you know, it's not so much the pricing that moves as much. It is the breadth of coverage that you get. You know, if you have an established, proven technology, you can get insurance if you suffer a breakdown event. But if you have a product that no one's really seen before and you're kind of providing proof of concept, you're going to be limited in the type of insurance you can get. And so while it's still insured, it won't be as robust as a proven technology. Okay. And again, we can provide that insurance solution, but it's very important that you work with the manufacturer to give you additional contractual remedies. You can't just say, oh, it's all going to be picked up by insurance. It'll be fine. It's really no, your technology's new. You're bringing it to market. I'm helping you bring it to market. So you need to have a much more robust discussion with the OEMs on newer technology to see how they can help share the risk with you and with the insurer. And on that new technology, there's a type of insurance I haven't mentioned yet that's called product warranty insurance. And that's really outside the scope of project insurance. But what that can do, and that's usually OEMs will have those negotiations, and they'll, if they are a smaller balance sheet company with the technology that they want to bring to market. An insurance company can evaluate their technology at the manufacturing level. And then if they're comfortable with this, they can then provide their seal of approval, which effectively backstops the warranty provided by the OEM. So you have a AA rated paper insurer saying this warranty will get paid, as opposed to a balance sheet not quite known from a smaller manufacturer. Mm-hmm. And that is a way to help get new prototypical technology to the market. But absent that, it's just time. We do synchronous condenser insurance for some projects, and we've seen the evolution of it. It starts with a bit of unknown, and you know, it's priced in a way that says, I'm not quite sure about this. But if you run successfully for 1 or 2 years and you show that it works, then all of a sudden the insurers get comfort based on the operating performance of your technology. And a big part of that has to do with, you know, insurance advisors like Lockton. We also have risk engineers in-house who will go visit the sites of our clients. They'll walk around, interview this plant management, and really get under the bonnet of the activity that's going on, and then report back to insurers. And that having that takes time, though. You only get there after the asset's been operating for a couple of years. But once you have that, you all of a sudden get to a much more stable place where insurance isn't such a front burner issue for a project.
Yeah, no, it's a fascinating topic. And maybe just to kind of play back a little bit of how I would think about a new product, I might say something like, I've talked to the OEM, and the OEM says within this 10-year lifespan, this part is going to wear out 5 times. And the insurer says, okay, interesting, I will insure it up to sort of 10 breaks within a 10-year period. And anything kind of within that period is covered. But if we get into the kind of real life running of this, and this thing breaks 1,000 times, then that doesn't fit within the insurance, because it's kind of way outside of what we originally considered with the scope. Is that a little bit of how the prototypical insurance works?
Well, actually, not, it works in inverse, actually.
Okay.
It will be the way that type of scenario would be played out would be that if you have a generator, I'll use a wind turbine example. You have a generator in the wind turbine. The wind turbine is supposed to last 20 years. The generator is going to last, you know, maybe 7. And it's like, and so if it's understood that it's at its failure time, the insurers may say, okay, it's about time for it to be replaced. This is more of a wear and tear type issue. So wear and tear is different from accidental sudden event. So it's really that early, if it breaks down more frequently than it's expected to, that's where the insurance would actually kick in.
Okay, mm-hmm. Interesting. I think there will be, outside of the battery heads who will be listening to this, I think there are also other techs that people are actively working on, and will find it interesting to kind of just have an understanding of how it is possible to get those assets insured and then ultimately taken forward for financing in the longer term. Okay, so I have 2 final questions to go through. The first one is there anything you'd like to plug?
Yeah, I mean, I think at Lockton, we've really been committed to this battery storage space, and we're really happy to see the evolution, both in geography and in the growth in the existing geographies. And what we're finding is that we think we're really at a point where we can start to speed up and simplify the insurance process. So we're developing some products. You talked about, is there a way to bundle this? We are coming up with some ways on the property side to really speed up and simplify the process through a facility mechanism. And that's one thing that we would, you know, we're just encouraged to speak with as many developers as we can to try to understand how it might work for them. So happy to take conversations on that later on.
Yeah, superb. And then, do you hold a contrarian view? Is it something that you believe that the majority of the market doesn't?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think my relationship with the market is because I am, as an advisor, I'm somewhat outside the battery storage market. So I like the question, but I'd say it's a belief that I hold that maybe others in the insurance industry also hold, but not, I'd say it would be contrarian to some developers and owners. And that is really, don't let insurance be the last thing you think about when you're working through the development of your project. I spent a lot of time in my career being approached by developers who are saying, I've finally got my loan ready to go. I've got my land. I've got my contracts all signed. I just need insurance. And then we said, ooh, it would have been nice to have this conversation quite a bit earlier in the process. And we can work with that. Insurance advisors in the insurance industry wants to be amendable. But if the earlier engagement an insurance advisor has with a developer, that way we can flag some of the issues we discussed on this podcast today. Is your spacing adequate? Do you have the appropriate cell tests before you sign the contract to buy X million dollars worth of batteries? And do you have, and if we can hit those early before contracts are signed, we can help influence the project, because you're signing a one-off contract to buy technology, but you're going to be trying to run this asset for 10 years, 15 years, depending on the degradation curve of your batteries. You're going to be buying insurance every year. So, you know, the little pound of, ounce of prevention you can put in on managing that side of things will give you a lot of results as you move down. Because if you don't, it can lead to delays and increased cost. And nobody looks good when that happens. So, you know, and there's enough to worry about in at financial close of a project. So if you engage us early, we can kind of help keep it smooth for you.
And if that is a contrary view for you, then I think you know what to do. Have that conversation on insurance ASAP. Okay, Michael, well, you've been a fantastic guest. I think this has given people a huge range of knowledge about the insurance space and how it's working with battery storage. So thank you very much for your time. Would love to have you on again soon.
Oh, Ed, I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.